Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb, we had the pleasure of speaking with Martin Dietrich, MD, PhD, an assistant professor of internal medicine at the University of Central Florida, a fellow of the American College of Physicians, and a medical oncologist at Florida Cancer Specialists and Research Institute, to discuss recent advances and ongoing research in stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer. In our exclusive interview, Dietrich discussed the latest developments with immunotherapy and targeted therapy in stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer. Thank you so much, Dr. Dietrich, for taking the time to speak with me this afternoon and join us on an episode of Enclave On Air. Happy to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me.
What have been some of the most significant updates regarding the treatment of patients with stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer that we've seen in recent years?
Well, I think the biggest part that we've seen is the addition of adjuvant or consolidative immunotherapy following the completion of concurrent chemotherapy and radiation. We have seen the 4-year overall survival data now and the 5-year update for the PACIFIC study in the adjuvant setting, obviously confirming the initial signal that patients that have the initiation of immunotherapy early, that they carry a significant risk reduction for progression and overall survival. So we're doing much better in this space. This is certainly standard of care for all patients receiving concurrent chemotherapy and radiation. There are obviously some subgroups that we're discussing, patients that are carrying EGFR and ALK mutations. There are trials ongoing that look at adjuvant targeted therapy here in a distinct manner as opposed to using immunotherapy. I think eventually the targeted therapies will replace the immunotherapy in the adjuvant setting for EGFR at least. And then obviously we've seen the data for adjuvant EGFR inhibition for resected stage 3 patients. I think this is also progress in addition to what we would typically do, which is 4 cycles of platinum-based chemotherapy. So we have progress on multiple ends here that are being seen. And the question is going to be, and we've had some interest, and there's some ongoing trials that we're looking at, whether or not concurrent immunotherapy with radiation would be a feasible practice pattern.
You mentioned the PACIFIC. We now have 5-year follow-up data. What is really the significance of that in this setting?
Well, I think this was the practice-changing breakthrough that we've been looking for. I think we still have some issues implementing it. I think the time from completion of chemotherapy, radiation to adjuvant or consolidative immunotherapy has been a problem. I think the signal we've seen is that the lapse time shouldn't be too long. Now we've seen improvements in those patients that were randomized within 2 weeks as opposed to those that have been enrolled at a later time. And unfortunately, in practice, we oftentimes see delays that are probably 2-3 months long. I think the synergy between early introduction of immunotherapy and radiation here is best if you do this in close follow-up sequence. But it is practice changing. I mean, this was one of the very few improvements that really made a big dent, more so than concurrent chemotherapy, more so than the different dosing regimens that we've seen for radiation. I do think that the appreciation of stage 3 as a systemic disease that can be widely grasped by immunotherapy here is critical.
And in terms of advances, next steps, there's the PACIFIC 2 trial. Would you like to outline that study and the expectations for that?
Well, the PACIFIC 2 trial is basically building on the PACIFIC study. Instead of using durvalumab in consolidated fashion, it is basically a concurrent usage of immunotherapy that is synergistically designed to basically capture the mechanism of pro-inflammatory radiation and the immune activating impact of durvalumab. We're wanting to see if there's an additional benefit. Obviously, we are working with 2 antagonistic mechanisms of chemotherapy and immunotherapy, and we'll have to see how the data will eventually shake out. My feeling is that, especially when it comes to durability of response, that we see a bigger impact from immunotherapy and the immunosuppression that eventually has cumulative toxicity, especially as we approach the end of radiation. We'd really like to see that this is probably a regimen that from a systemic side effect profile, as well as from an efficacy standpoint, is better tolerated and hopefully also leading to better outcomes. But the data is not out, so we'll have to see that. For now, concurrent chemotherapy with radiation followed by immunotherapy is really the standard of care, with the exception of the EGFR ALK subgroups that I think are more contested.
And another trial in this setting is CheckMate 73L, which is evaluating nivolumab and chemoradiation followed by nivolumab and ipilimumab. Could you speak to the developments that led to the inception of that trial?
Well, I mean, I think we've recognized that stage three and stage four essentially carry have very similar kind of behavioral patterns. Stage three is a microscopically metastatic disease with a relapse rate that is approaching 90% in the stage three lung cancer setting, while obviously for stage four is a macroscopically metastatic disease. So recognizing again that this is a systemic disease that is being cytoreduced in the chest, I think is an important part. The CheckMate 73L trial is a large randomized study with a basically a three-arm design looking at nivolumab plus concurrent chemotherapy radiation followed by nivolumab plus ipilimumab maintenance, nivo alone, or concurrent chemotherapy radiation that is being looked at for the adjuvant setting with nivolumab alone. So we're basically looking at early introduction and also the introduction of concurrent combination immunotherapy in addition to current standard of care. I know that we've seen this benefit translating into in later line settings. We've seen the update for CheckMate 227 and 9LA in stage four. We've seen some very early but very promising data for neoadjuvant therapies in the pre-surgical context. And I think this was a very similar signal. There's no reason to believe clinically or biologically that this wouldn't have an increased impact. We obviously do want to closely observe for additional toxicity concerns with doublet immunotherapy. Want to see how the data looks from a balance of efficacy and safety. But I think in general terms, what we've learned is, and whether you think about adjuvant, neoadjuvant, or consolidative immunotherapy, that the principles of biology have held true throughout all stages, and that the introduction would probably be yielding a similar level of benefit as we've seen in the stage four setting. So I'm curious about the toxicity, but even more curious about the efficacy. In stage three setting, we've observed a very interesting phenomenon, which is that in clinical practice, oftentimes the threshold to stop medication is actually lower than it is in the metastatic setting. And one can look at this from both ends. One says, well, it's an optional stage, so stopping it at the first sight of side effects or out of convenience is a reasonable idea. I like to think of it as a higher stake setting in stage three, where we really more realistically look at this as curative, even though we have now long-term survivors in stage four as well. So I would think that the intensification of therapy in early lines is really going to be one of the pathways for us to provide better outcomes for a broader set of the lung cancer community. We don't, beyond durvalumab right now, we don't have any immunotherapy in the curative intent setting. I think this will change in the near future with adjuvant atezolizumab, at least in the PD-L1 positive population. But the same principle holds true there. We've seen a large benefit in the PD-L1 greater than 50% patients. And then a lesser benefit for patients that are in the PD-L1 setting from 1 to 49. So we'll have to see, but I'm obviously very excited about it. And I do believe that immunotherapy in the concurrent setting will be a great benefit. And it will also pacify those that are holding on to chemotherapy by not replacing it, but by basically providing an additional benefit to the concurrent chemotherapy, even though concurrent chemo radiation probably had a 95% driven benefit by radiation on the very small contribution of by chemotherapy.
And as you said, we'll have to wait and see. But based on what we know of each modality alone, what is your predictions in terms of tolerability with this regimen?
Well, I have to say that I don't expect any additional concerns like we've seen in stage four. You know, this is a new ipilimumab dosing. I think the standard 1 milligram per kilogram body weight for ipilimumab in particular is going to be better tolerated. I think the relative incremental increase in side effects is substantially less. So unlike PD-1, PD-L1s, where the dose dependency of side effect really doesn't seem to be as clear, for CTLA-4, it is almost exponential between 1, 3, and 10 milligrams per kilogram body weight. So my prediction is going to be that this is going to be as tolerated in stage 4. I do think that we have to distinguish there between the reputation of a toxicity and the actual presentation, especially when we look at gastrointestinal toxicities. I think ipilimumab has really shaped up to be better manageable with reduction in the occurrence of these side effects, but also in the way we manage it. I think we've learned a great deal about the usage of the colitis armamentarium in the setting of autoimmune disease beyond steroids. And I think that's why I think those regimens will be feasible. And if they provide an improved outcome, I think the acceptance of an increased toxicity potential is reasonable. I can certainly think that the intensification of immunotherapy responses is the only pathway that we currently have within reach to actually enhance our long-term responses. One of the ASCO signals that we've seen is that really an adverse event leading to discontinuation provides an improved overall survival outcome. So unlike chemotherapy, where these setbacks are really detrimental for patients, here they may actually be beneficial and really what we're trying to achieve, which is a general activation of the immune system.
Are there any other research efforts ongoing that are evaluating therapies for this specific patient population that could build on the data from Pacific that you'd like to emphasize?
So in the stage 3 population, I think the most practice-changing trial in the near future, in my opinion, is the LAURA trial. The LAURA trial is looking at adjuvant use of osimertinib following chemotherapy and radiation in the setting of EGFR mutant population. In the Pacific trial, it was clear that the subset has seemed to derive a small benefit, which biologically would be congruent with what we've seen in the stage 4 setting. So I think this is gonna revamp the idea. And then we've seen a number of interesting trials that looked at induction chemo immunotherapy in this trial. So in this trial setting of stage 3 lung cancer. So I think this may be maybe another concern to maybe response rates were dramatic. But, so maybe shaping the radiation fields into a smaller setting and containing disease earlier. Which of these regimens eventually will be the winner will depend obviously on the data, but also on the broader acceptance of paradigm. So we don't have any side-by-side comparisons. I do think that some patients benefit from chemo, some patients benefit more from immunotherapy. And in the absence of clear guidance on biomarkers and other features, I think the combinations will eventually win the race, similar like they do in the stage 4 setting, that chemotherapy plus immunotherapy is going to be what we're using, at least in the concurrent setting, followed by an immunotherapy maintenance.
And now broadening the scope across the spectrum of non-small cell lung cancer, are there any research efforts ongoing at your institution that you'd like to call attention to?
Well, I mean, we are looking at a great deal of combination immunotherapies. I think this is part of our ongoing efforts at Florida Cancer and our partner at Sarah Cannon. We're working together in a plethora of sets here. I think the understanding is that obviously the PD-1 centric worldview was one that worked for a small subset of patients in the lung cancer population, the non-oncogenic driver population, about 20 to 30% long-term benefit. But it's a subset of a subset that we're looking at here. So we're looking at other angles and other markers that are guiding us. So this is an effort that goes both on the diagnostic and the therapeutic side, and trying to intensify our responses. And then also building on a pipeline of CAR T cells. I think they'll find, at least in a subset of lung cancers, will find their way. And the development of antibody drug conjugates, I think this will be the next frontier. I think we've kind of been stalling in the immunotherapy space to a certain extent. I think since the introduction of the PD-1 inhibitors in 2015, we kind of have been moving in broad direction, but not necessarily in a deep direction. I do think the antibody drug conjugates will help us deliver chemotherapy more safely and tackle additional subsets. I do want to think about the HER2 positives, the mutation HER2 was in non-small cell lung cancer, where we're seeing 60%+ response rate with the trastuzumab deruxtecan. I think we'll see additional benefits for NRG1 fusions with targeted inhibitors, next generation TKIs, and a number of subset for resistance mutations, but also antibody therapy that is basically utilizing bispecific technologies. We had the first approval with amivantamab. I think that's a great progress. So it'll get more complex. It'll certainly not get easier, and we'll have to really dissect lung cancer into the many different diseases that it really represents. Apart from the similar origin of the lung, I think biologically we'll dissect them into many settings. So the intensification of therapies, looking at the PD-1 failures, is a major focus of our institution.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.